listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this great planet, a beautiful planet, by the way, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. I'm going to let you in on a little bit of inside information here this evening. I'm getting a lot of emails asking questions, various questions, and I'm just going to answer them all right here, okay? I don't have the time available to answer each one of those individually, and so I've sort of grouped them together. And the first question is, you have noticed, no doubt, that the free podcast has not been updated for last week or this week. And I'm getting emails, people wondering why. Well, so am I. We have tried to upload those podcasts, and we use a service called mypodcast.com. And we've tried to upload, and they will not upload. So I went to the support forums to see if there was perhaps some explanation. There is no explanation, but there are tons of people who have written into the forums wanting to know why they cannot upload. So it's not just us. Apparently it's everyone that is using that service. We don't know why. Something isn't working. If it continues to not work for just a little while longer, you know what Kevin will do, don't you? Move. And because I think it's important for you to get those free podcasts, and that's something that I have steadfastly, absolutely demanded from the beginning, is as much of our show and as much of our site as is possible has to be free. And, of course, we've kept the live broadcasts absolutely free. And we want to keep those free podcasts coming your way. So as soon as they get their act together, it will begin to work again, I guess. But we'll see over the next day or two if they respond to all of the messages in their forums. And that brings up our forums in our members area. As you know, we moved from one hosting company to another over non-performance of the other hosting company. After 4 years, I just had enough, and so we moved. And so I had to reinstall a lot of things. The forums have to be reinstalled, but as you may know, I work a 40-hour job. And I simply have not had the chance to get to it yet and will do so. And I hope that you'll bear with us. We will try to get that done this week. So, let's see, what else was there? Yes, every once in a while I still get someone who says, oh, I see you have to pay in order to listen to your show. I'll never be back to your site. Knuckle Dragger, it's free. We'll be back with Robert Stanley right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steeline Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel All-Star with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. My guest this evening is Robert Stanley. He is the author of a book, I might say a compendium. It is absolutely jam-packed with information and details, called Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. He's been with us before. We're delighted he is with us again. Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Good evening, Kevin, and thank you for having me.
Robert, over the course of weeks and stretching into a few months, we have had telephone contact. And you shared with me recently that there seems to be, not just seems to be, you have quantified, you verified with numbers, that there actually is, we're in the middle of a major UFO flap, especially over the nation's capital. And I want to just jump off into that tonight and talk about that, and then we'll get into some of the things that I've highlighted in the book that we didn't get to talk about last time.
Okay, fair enough. You know, the book came out in September of 2006, so since that time I've continued my investigation. And mainly because of all the publicity I've gotten, there are a lot of people have contacted me with their stories and photographs. And so the number has grown from whatever it was, I think 220, I think listed in the book, sightings between 1850 and 2006. Now it's up to 251 since 1850 to 2007. So the database is growing. I suspect there's actually more out there. But here's how it really breaks down, according to my latest analysis, is that in the first 92 years after 1850, there were six events that we know of that were reported about UFO sightings over Washington, D.C. proper. In the past 60 years, there's been 245 reported incidents of UFOs passing over and or landing and even doing aerial combat over Washington, D.C., specifically Capitol Hill. That's a huge number for such a small area. 245 events in 60 years, that's quite a few events per year. So, I mean, if you average it out. Now, but here's where it gets interesting. In the 1950s, I was able to tally up 79 events that occurred in that particular decade. Between 2000 and 2007, that's the current time we're in, frame we're in now, I've got 76 reported events, including a photograph of them landing on the Capitol in July 16, 2002.
That photograph is in your book, isn't it?
It is, and it's also on the website. There's a copy of it on the website, and I've updated the website so that you can see pictures of July 1949 UFOs over the Pentagon, clearly taken by an Air Force officer during the day on July 4, 1949. There's also pictures from July of 1952 as they're passing over the Capitol. And then there's, again, there's July 2002 where they were actually landed on the Capitol building and were swarming over the area.
You know, that's kind of interesting, all those July dates. And, you know, it makes you wonder if there's something more to the movie Independence Day.
I suppose there's a lot of ways you could parse this and trying to make sense of it. They clearly have their own schedule. They have their own agenda. What I find very troubling about the data, the photographic analysis has shown us, and some of the eyewitness accounts too, that these things can appear and disappear at a flash of light. They apparently create a wormhole of some. I mean, this is just a term that's been created. I'm not sure that's the correct way to describe it, but. Some people call these things stargates. They did show up on film. That's the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. It took us months to analyze and understand what we were looking at. But they create some sort of energy portal that allows them to pop in and out of our reality at will. And it's very hard to defend against something like this. And what I like, what I find disturbing, and one of the reasons I think that the media and the government won't talk about this, specifically as it relates to D.C., is because this would, it does make people nervous, because this is prohibited and restricted airspace, and it is patrolled regularly, and nobody should be allowed, without a permit, to go passing through that airspace.
Well, I want to talk about one of those incidents in just a moment. Yeah, I don't want to get to it yet. I want to talk about a specific incident that happened after 9/11.
Right.
Happened in the month of December. Mm. And we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
I think many of our listeners will be shocked to hear what you said, that they have actually landed on the Capitol building. Have you ever heard people, usually debunkers, say, well, if they're real, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? Would appear maybe they're trying.
Yeah, they passed over the White House on more than one occasion, but as I mentioned in the book, the White House, whatever the current administration is, doesn't really represent all of the people.
Yeah.
The Capitol building, actually, if they wanted to speak to our leaders, because we don't have a particular leader. Yes, the president is, but, you know, he has a cabinet, et cetera. He has an entire administration. But even they have to answer to, and our checks and balances is all regulated through the Capitol building with the Senate and the House.
Okay? That's Congress true. That's where the real ball game is in the United States of America. The real ball game is in the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Yes, because this is a representative democracy. It's not a dictatorship. So why would they, if they really were interested in contacting our leaders, that's where they would go.
All right. Now, tell us a little bit about this landing on the Capitol.
Yeah, I know. It sounds fantastic, but we do have this captured on 35-millimeter film, which has been analyzed by an independent film lab in Washington, D.C. The transcript of the analysis is there in the book in Chapter 1. I've spoken to the person, and he is very credible. And he really didn't even want his name mentioned in this because, you know, there's such a stigma attached to UFOs. But anyway, he's part of history now. The film has not been tampered with. So you can dispute it all you want. If you're a skeptic, that's fine, but you better do your homework in that. You cannot, if you do tamper with 35-millimeter negatives, then you're going to see evidence of that, and there is no evidence of that according to the analysis. So, okay, on the other hand, you have people like Dr. McAbee saying, without actually examining this, he has said that this is lens flares. What he didn't understand, what we've tried to make it clear to him, is that the Nikon Nikkor lenses that were being used that night in conjunction with a Nikon camera, are 100% distortion-free glass. And, in fact, some of these shots were taken with a polarized filter over the lens on top of it all. So there's no way. I mean, besides that, if there are lens flares, they don't look like this whatsoever. And when you analyze a lens flare using Photoshop and other imaging technologies in a computer of the actual images as it's scanned in, and we've scanned these things in at 4,000 dpi, so we can see the resolution on these things is phenomenal. But these are clearly not lens flares. Lens flares tend to be opaque and streaky. That's not what we're looking at here. In fact, with the further you push in, you can actually see these various layers of energy fields around the craft. So,
now, how large was the craft?
You know, we've tried to estimate that based on the scaffolding that was up on there, and it's a good 30 feet across. It's really hard to tell in the picture how far away you are from the actual building, but I've looked at aerial pictures, and physically he was, at least a quarter mile away from the actual object that landed on the building. He was on the other side of the reflecting pool, and I'm going to say it's at least a couple thousand feet away. I mean, and taken at night too. You got to understand with the ambient light, this is a pretty good trick that he was able to pull off, capturing the images. And that's the other thing too, the light source had to be incredibly bright for it to register that robustly on the film. In other words, it saturated the film, even when he wasn't... Okay, one of the final frame is really quite astonishing. Probably the most astonishing thing was Senate side of the Capitol, what they call Lower Senate Park. That was a 3.5-minute exposure. And this is after he'd taken all the other pictures professionally for the album cover. He saw things going on in the sky, but he was really... I mean, they were paying him a lot of money to shoot a professional album cover, so he wasn't... It's not like he was taking pictures of the UFOs. Let's be clear about that. This was just a coincidence.
Very, all right, very so important. He's out there shooting a professional album cover.
Yes.
And I was going to say, if you hadn't mentioned that kind of equipment is not a hobbyist. That's
no.
Very expensive equipment.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's had his stuff published professionally for some time. And prior to doing that, he'd actually worked for ABC News. I think he said like 18 years, 14 of the, or was it 14 years? Well, anyway, he did a lot of years. In a lot of those years, he actually worked at the White House, which also included Air Force One. And the helicopters are called Marine One.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he actually got to work for ABC News, had a high-level security clearance to be at the White House working for ABC News. And you can just imagine who the first people he contacted, even though he was no longer in their employ, the first people he contacted in the news media after he got these pictures was ABC News.
Now, they were real interested, too, weren't they?
No, they were absolutely not interested. Just like, well, I'll tell you who the latest person is to take on this role is Dateline. Stone Phillips' producers are looking at this because they threw it out there. They said, we want to see your best close encounter on film, specifically video. But we submitted it. They looked at it. They're still looking at it. I don't know if they're ever going to produce this particular segment or not, or whether or not they're going to use it. But they're they're one of many media outlets that we've contacted with the story and the film. And specifically this particular photographer's credentials. But they're very, although a lot of the producers, the low-level producers, are very hot. When you first talk to them, they're like, wow, yeah, let's run with this. When they actually shop it to their bosses, they get a bucket of cold water on their head.
Yeah.
Because the media is not there to tell us the whole truth.
Well, that's because those producers have a bucket of mud for brains.
Well, it's not just that, Kevin. I believe that the powers that be can squelch, they can really put the screws to any media outlet through by threatening to fine them through the FCC or revoke their license, and that would kill them.
Yeah, well, they can do that. However, if that media outlet went public with that threat, it could not be carried out.
Well, they don't know that, and besides that, I don't think those guys have enough nerve to do that. They're fat, dumb, and happy in the positions that they're in, just collecting all that. I mean, think about it. The FCC is just giving them public airspace that is being regulated by the government, is literally given to these guys for free so that they can make millions of dollars on advertising. And they don't want to upset that apple cart.
Well, in fairness, let me correct just one thing. It isn't free. Those license fees are enormous.
They are, huh?
Yeah, they are for television.
Okay.
The license fees are enormous. But having said that, it's nowhere near as enormous as the income from the advertising. It's a drop in the ocean compared to the amount of money they make. But I'm going to stick with my bucket of mud for brain statement because of this.
Okay.
All of the media polls have shown, this is Arbitron, Edison Research Group, and various other media polls, have shown that, number one, newspapers are way, way, way in the back of the pack. The public is just not interested. Terrestrial radio is now falling almost to the level of the newspapers in popularity.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Internet radio is number two, right behind television, and television is slipping fast.
Huh.
And internet radio is growing fast. Do you know how many people listen to internet radio every week here in the United States?
No.
72 million.
Wow, really?
That's correct. Now, that's a little known fact, but it is a fact. And it's a fact that all of the broadcasting executives are well aware of. Mm-hmm. It would seem to me that they would begin to understand that there's another poll that asks how many people in America think that UFOs actually exist and that they're possibly extraterrestrial. 80%.
Wow.
Now, when you spit in the face of 80% of the public, how long do you think they'll keep coming back for it? And that's why I say they have a bucket of mud for brains.
Okay.
And I'm not very kind about it. I mean, it makes no sense to me that, I mean, really, it makes absolutely no sense that you would insult the public you're trying to sell to.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But there's obviously an agenda here, as far as I can tell. It's not just some executive in a media corporation. There's somebody beyond that, I think, is squelching this information in newspapers, radio, and television. The only outlet we have is radio, and internet radio specifically is covering this story on a daily basis.
Well, very soon you will be able to come on internet radio here.
Mm-hmm.
And it will work just like television. They'll get video right along with their radio.
Wow.
So we can put those pictures up for them to see. All right, now, December the 16th, 2002.
Yeah. Right.
CNN reported that two jets had been dispatched to intercept an unidentified intruder into Washington airspace, D.C.
Right.
airspace. The jets did go up. They stayed on patrol for about an hour. The story then came back that it was either high wind or a flock of birds that had caused the radar to have a strange blip on it. But you found that there were witnesses on the ground that saw something different.
Yep, just like it. It's the same, and the same thing happened July 26th. 10 days after they landed, they came back again, and NORAD scrambled jets then, and the official explanation was, we didn't see anything, yet the people on the ground who called in to the radio stations, that's how the media got word of it, was people on the ground were seeing these things, mainly because, you know, not only did they see the UFOs, but they saw the jets are so freaking loud when they scramble like that over the city, you know, anybody that's awake at that hour is going to look up and see what the hell's going on. So, on both occasions, there was people. Actually, in December 16th, there were people. It was actually daytime, and the lady who, I believe it was a woman who gave that report, said that she actually was an Air Force brat and had lived on the base and knew the sound and knew that they were chasing something, and when she looked up, she actually saw them chasing something that was doing evasive maneuvers, which is identical to what happened July 26th. By the way, the photographer ran into last year at the dentist's office. He ran into a Washington, D.C. police officer, and he says, you know, have you seen any odd stuff around in the sky around here? And she says, what do you mean? He says, well, let me show you. And he pulled up the pictures on his laptop of the thing on the Capitol, and she said, that's what I chased on July 26th. He says, what do you mean? And he says, at that time, I was working Air National Guard. I was a pilot. I was a reserve pilot for Air National Guard, and I actually went up there to the intercept. She says, that's exactly what I saw. So, but she would not let him. She said, you cannot use my name. You cannot record what I just said. You know, just forget what I just told you. Because apparently they dressed her down afterwards. They debriefed her, and they gave her a different assignment completely.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, here we have a pilot that says, that's real.
Yes.
But I can't talk about it. I can't speak about it. And then they reassign her. How do we, I mean, that part of it we're used to. I mean, that's kind of normal procedure.
Yeah.
But how do we move from that to getting this picture authenticated enough so that broadcast executives will say, yeah, let's run with that?
Well, I think it goes deeper than that, Kevin. As I told you privately, and even with the emails I shared with you from that former Capitol Hill employee, it's clear that people in the Senate are aware of my work, and that some of them do know the situation is ongoing there. I'm not sure what they're doing, if anything, about it. I'm not sure that they can do anything about it. But I can tell you that the Capitol Police are very concerned about this, and they do have to keep logs of each and every event.
All right. We have to keep an appointment with a commercial break. And when we come back, we'll pick up right there. How about that, folks? Did you know that there is a photograph by a professional photographer, a news photographer, of a UFO landing on the Capitol? More with Robert Stanley when we come back. Hey, don't forget, I didn't mention it earlier, but don't forget, if you haven't subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, be sure you go over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe, all right? It's called the K-Files E-Zine. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and it never costs you a penny. So be sure you do that, all right? So we're talking with Robert Stanley, and we're talking about, you said, the Capitol Police have to make a log of every incident. Now, that is a fact. I know that any incident reported to the police has to be logged.
Right.
So,
including the the event that was captured on film where they landed, the photographer, because he has his father was in the Air Force, served in the Pentagon, his brother does too, and like I said, he worked at the White House. So he figured, I'm going to report this to the Capitol Police. And he went to the detective division, and he filed a report, and he says, did you guys catch this on film? Because I sure as hell did. And they looked at it, and they were pretty astonished, and they did take his report. And the individual that took the report kept in touch with the photographer. He was subsequently promoted, and he's a high-ranking officer in the Capitol Police. We do not mention his name or his rank, but he has tried. He's tried to find a way that he could get copies, you know, scrubbed copies of these logs, you know, in other words, that it wouldn't show any sensitive information, just to but it would verify that the officers actually saw certain things at certain times at the, while on duty at the Capitol. In other words, just to confirm officially that something was going on, but I believe that whenever he's tried to do this, he's been told not to. You know,
in every other city across America, those are public information. Those logs are available to the press.
Right.
And not only that, the initial report made by the first officer on the scene to whom, or the officer to whom the call is assigned, the initial report by federal law is public property. It is available to the press. It's available to you. If you walk in and ask to see it, they have to show you the initial report.
Yeah, well, I tried going to their public relations officer, and he told me that they do not share that information publicly, that they could neither confirm nor deny that was actually the case. But as you could see from the email that I sent you with the latest email exchange I've had with this retired Senate employee, that he was standing there with a Capitol police officer that he knew quite well when this thing passed over in, I think he said, 1998, during the daytime, flashing a beam of light down, brilliant beam of light, and intermittently. And he says he's absolutely certain that that particular officer put that in the log because it was going through prohibited airspace over the Capitol.
Now, you've had another report of Capitol Police being present when a UFO flies over, and the crowd of people that see it become excited, and the police are trying to control the crowd.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
Well, the initial report that I got on that, and it is included in the book, was a guy. He's a map maker. And he was there with his girlfriend or whatever. January 1st, 2000 was what they call the new millennium celebration. And he was on the mall. And I'm not sure that they were Capitol Police. I think they were actually D.C. police that were trying to control the crowd, because there was like about a million people there that night for the event. There was a lot of dignitaries and celebrities, and they were putting on this major light show for a few hours that night. And the first individual that came forward, what he saw was very brief, and he said that there was smaller objects, and then there was these larger cylindrical things passing low over the city. He was sure that someone else saw the same thing because there was such a large crowd of people. Unfortunately, he had to go. He really couldn't stay and so watch any further. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and his girlfriend had to go, so they took the subway down, and he couldn't see he didn't know what happened after that. So he had put this out on the internet 7 years after the event. He gets contacted by somebody else who claims they were there, another man who was there with his significant other. And what they described, and I did forward that to you, I found was astonishing. The police were not just trying to control the crowd, they were actually in shock by what they were seeing. I mean, I would have been too. Clearly, what they were seeing is beyond belief, I think, to most people. If taken by itself, it sounds like the rantings of a lunatic. But when you put it into context of all the other events, it makes actually perfectly good sense. They were responding to signals. According to Richard Hoagland, somebody was actually signaling these guys, who he claims are the ancient gods of our ancestors. He says they were sending direct signals to these beings up there, and they obviously responded in mass. I mean, there was literally dozens of UFOs that passed over. At one point, they were literally swooping in over the crowd at super low altitude. I mean, some people are trying to jump up and touch these things. One particular police officer his eyes were as big as saucers, and he was beside himself. I think I would have been too. I mean, what can you do in a situation like that?
Now, you know, I think, now this is speculation, but honestly, I think an event like that, an encounter like that, would be much more startling and would have more a tendency to shake a person to their core if they are operating in a world of believe and disbelieve.
Yeah.
Rather than if it is, it is. Now, I get lots of flack for saying things like that. I'll tell you in advance, I'll get some flack for it.
Yeah.
But look, whatever is, is. And if it's up there, it's up there. And rather than, you know, if you spend your life saying, I don't believe in flying saucers, I don't believe in UFOs, I don't believe in extraterrestrials, well, it's naturally going to shake you right down to your boots when one shows up and says, hi.
Well, this wasn't just one. There was quite a few. I mean, really, I don't know. I didn't count what the guy was saying, but it was like, you know, more than a dozen. And there was different kinds, and they were doing different maneuvers. And at one point, some military helicopters came, and the UFOs left. But as soon as the military helicopters left, the UFOs returned. And they were getting very intimate with the crowd. And I guess one guy had a heart attack or fainted or whatever. It was very strange. I mean, it was absolutely surreal the way this guy was. And you got to understand, this is really early in the morning. A lot of these people were, you know, maybe just a little just beside themselves anyway from all the noise, literally all the explosions and the lights, the music, the fireworks, the lateness, the early, you know, hours of the morning. It's a surreal moment anyways. And then to have these things start just showing up and responding and trying to interact with the crowd like that. Now, here's the thing. Let's just back up just a bit. People are probably thinking, no way that could happen and it never gets reported. Well, I got news for you. It does happen, and it hasn't been reported widely. In fact, there's a reason for it. In July of 1952, I'm going to refer now to a book called Shoot Them Down, The Flying Saucer Air Wars of 1952 by Frank Fascino Jr. I've interviewed him, and I've read his book thoroughly, and I found this to be utterly fascinating. It's just mind-boggling, actually. And it was July 26th, I believe, yeah. And according to Bill Burns, who wrote that book with Colonel Corso, although there was a lot of errors in it, nonetheless, he did work with Corso on this. According to Bill Burns, he interviewed a guy named Marine Lieutenant Colonel Marion, quote, Black Mac Magruder. He was a World War II fighter pilot, okay? Now, this information comes from his sons, according to Bill Burns, who spoke to his sons. They say that their father received a phone call on July 26, 1952, where at his home in Washington. Shortly after, he was escorted to the Pentagon in a black staff car surrounded by a police motorcycle motorcade. He was a Marine veteran, legendary pilot, leader of the Hellcat Squadron, known as Black Max Killers, who fought in the Pacific campaign. Anyway, this guy was very, very credible. And says here, that night, Magruder remembers it would be many years later before he actually told his sons what really happened, but he says that night when he went to the Pentagon, he was taken to a situation room. He said, inside the room, under the cloak of highest level secrecy, a group of military officers watched as Air Force jets entered Washington airspace to intercept the unidentified radar blips. The Air Force pilots flying jets equipped with rockets had been ordered to defend the airspace, engage the unidentified object, and shoot them down if possible. Magruder would tell his sons years later that at least one jet simply vanished from the radar screen and was never, ever seen again. He told his sons that the Air Force lost pilots that night, pilots who had been scrambled to intercept. Pilots and the jets literally were vaporized in thin air over D.C. in July 26 of 1952. That's why the Pentagon, the military, ordered all photographs and movies to be confiscated under national security. All the cameras, all the pictures, all the movies were confiscated, except for one still photograph that was accidentally overlooked. And it got leaked out, and many years later, it became the only photograph we have of a squadron of UFOs passing over the Capitol. That all changed in 2005. When I first broke this story, we suddenly had more pictures of UFOs on the 50-year anniversary. We have UFOs over the Capitol again. Well, later that year, a British television company called Channel 4 aired a special called with Nick. It was narrated by Nick Cook, who's with Jane's Defense, at Jane's Defense Weekly, actually.
Let me get you to hold that story until we get back from this break. All right, boy, edge of the seat stuff, huh? We'll be back right after this with Robert Stanley.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
By the way, let me say to any terrestrial radio program directors or general managers who may be listening, and we have some who do, I know that. Let me just say to you that the way you turn it around and bring that $72 million back is you bring shows like this back to your audience, because that's where they went. Robert Stanley is my guest, and Robert, you... We had to cut you off right in mid-sentence there. You're talking about this British TV station that our radio station that did a special program.
Yeah, it's a television station called Channel 4. They first aired it in October of 2005. It later came to the States. That's when I first saw it, and my jaw dropped because I actually know Nick Cook. And in it, there are 17 seconds of historic movie footage of from July of that fleet of UFOs flying over the Capitol building at a very low altitude. So when I contacted Nick, I said, wow, where did you get that? And he says, I have no idea. Later, I contacted him again, and he says, oh, that was computer-generated. So I dropped the issue at the time. I went back and re-examined it later because I found that a History Channel had picked it up and was running it as authentic. So I got a copy of the original broadcast, and we downloaded it. We broke it down frame by frame. We did an analysis, myself and the photographer from D.C. He's actually very good at you know, working in video frame by frame. So we were able to analyze this thing, and it is absolutely real. You can see scratches on there. You can see the light actually bend around the Capitol Dome as they pass behind it. There's no way this is computer generated. What it is the producers from Channel 4 went to an archive. I'm not sure which one because they have a tremendously long list. At the end of that particular show, there's just a laundry list of archives that they visited. So what I visualized them doing was going to an archive, viewing this thing, and capturing it on a digital video camera and walking out with a copy and never telling anybody that they did that. Because there's no way in hell they would have got permission to take it out or get a copy any other way. That stuff is still classified. So if you want to see this, folks, you got to go to my website. It's the only place you're going to see these photographs in the movie. You got to scroll down on this particular page. Well, here's what you do. Go to www.unicusmagazine.com. It's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. And you'll see my picture, and next to it is the book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. Just click on the cover of the book, and it'll take you into a whole other area of the website devoted to what we're discussing here tonight.
All right. And, folks, if you can't remember the website name, you know we always put the web link right beside our guest picture. So you can go and click that. It'll take you there as well.
Thank you.
Now, Robert, we've discussed some things tonight that are not generally discussed when people talk about UFOs.
Yeah, no kidding.
Landing on the Capitol building is not generally discussed. I'm wondering, you know, you've written it in your book. The photograph is included. In fact, there's a CD that comes with the book, with the photographs.
Right, but most of those pictures are also available for free on my website. I am not charging for the photographs. I just figured it was easier to, rather than spending a lot of money for color photographs, I just include a CD of the photographs with the book in the back. Or you can just go to my website and see most of them there for free.
All right. Now, what generally has been the reaction to your report and to the photograph of this landing on the Capitol building?
Disbelief, and that's understandable, because most people don't, and I didn't even understand, I didn't have the full picture when I started the investigation in 2005. I was shocked, too. I couldn't understand it. I thought, no way, I would have heard about that for sure. I mean, that's huge news. How could that have been overlooked? July, mid-July, now I'm looking at it in spring of, well, let me see, July 2002, and I got word of it in spring 2005 from my friend Daryl Sims, and I thought, well, 3 years have passed almost, and I haven't even heard a word of this. It can't be. So I called the photographer, and he started talking to me, and we exchanged emails, and then he started sending me high-resolution copies of the stuff, and I was absolutely floored. But it got better. I mean, really more interesting in that when I started digging into, really investigating the history, I couldn't believe, Kevin, how much people have missed on this story. It's like they are intentionally ignoring it. Like I said, I think the reason is this. Let's just step backwards one more time to 52. So in July 26, 52, you got people, hundreds of, according to the historic record, there was hundreds of people taking photographs and movies at that time because they showed up 22 times that year. people had plenty of opportunities to catch this stuff on film. But this was no joke. Like I said, according to Black Magruder's sons, he said that these things actually shot, vaporized, killed our pilots right over the Capitol while they were trying to defend our airspace in July 26, 52. Fast forward to September, I'm sorry, I don't have the date. I'm thinking September 12th. But anyway, somewhere in mid-September, they showed up again, and this time in large numbers. And they moved all the way from Florida up the coast, and we were in a run-and-gun air war with these things using the what they, coincidentally, they were called Starfighters. Anyway, Starfire, I think is what it was. The first jets that had rockets, air-to-air, rockets, missiles. And we were trying to blow these things out of the sky. The problem was they have defensive capabilities as well. Some of them are absolutely lethal. Others were just like force fields. They have the ability to extend the force field out and actually override the electrical circuitry on the jet, which would cause them to flame out or crash. And if it would take a lot more energy, but if they wanted to, it was demonstrated in September, in that September battle of 1952, that they could literally project a beam of energy and vaporize the craft with the pilot in it, just disintegrate it into thin air. That was a daunting task for our pilots. And these were veteran pilots too. A lot of them served in various campaigns. They were very seasoned combat pilots, and they were flying different kinds of craft. But they basically got their asses kicked by these UFOs. We did deliver some very lethal blows. I mean, at some point we actually did disable one, and the guy was on the ground dead. But there was another disabled craft that literally passed right over the Capitol. And it was being shepherded by other UFOs that were not disabled. Apparently, they weren't terribly afraid of us. They knew our limitations. We were hitting them with everything we had. That's when the military leadership were literally, they were beside themselves. They were absolutely freaking out. They said, this is an invasion. And they were scared of, they wanted to shoot these things down and examine them and whatever, see what was going on. But the fact of the matter is, when they actually had the chance to do it over D.C., they could see on the radar that there was at least one very, very, very large mothership that was observing this, acting as like an aircraft carrier would. And they said, this thing, we have no idea what that thing is capable of. It could literally wipe out this entire city, like you said, Independence Day. So they were... they were beside themselves.
They shot one of them down, right?
They actually attacked quite a few of them and disabled them to some degree.
You said there was one on the ground.
There was two that were badly disabled. One of them hit the ground, and that pilot, and it was a reptilian, that particular pilot was picked up later by state troopers, and it was deceased. There was another craft, the one that passed over the Capitol very low in flames, ended up going to a place called Flatwoods. I think it's in Virginia. Very rural area, very much a wooded rural area. It landed. It affected repairs. It took off. It landed again, affected more repairs, and eventually was escorted back up to the awaiting mother craft. But a lot of, in the interim, though, a lot of people saw that thing, and they called it the Flatwoods Monster.
And Frank Frescino wrote a book about that. I had him on the show talking about that book.
Exactly. That's a big part of the book. But, if you haven't read the rest, I mean, really, the book is not just about Flatwoods Monster. It details the events, the actual aerial battles that took place over Washington, D.C. twice in 1952 and up and down the East Coast, specifically in the year of 1952. We lost a lot of pilots that were trying to intercept these craft. So are they all friendly? Hell no.
Well, the thing about it, though, how friendly would you be if somebody was shooting at you?
I understand that, Kevin, but why would you go into an unfriendly zone and keep pushing, trying to get in, unless you had an agenda? You just don't do that. If the natives are restless, you don't just go in there and stick your thumb in their eye. And that's what they were doing. They were testing us, I believe.
Yeah. Well, we don't do that, but then their culture may be different. We'll talk about that when we come back. We have we've got a break. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. When we do come back, we'll open the telephone lines for you at 1-800-289-1092 all across the United States of America and all across Canada. That's toll-free.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. My guest this evening is Robert Stanley. And, Robert, let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. It's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
I know.
I'm usually always the first caller, you know, just the timing, I guess.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody with that kind of luck.
I'm usually the first caller on other radio shows, too, but that's a different story.
All right. And what's on your mind this evening?
Well, Robert, you said that one of those UFOs was shot down. Has there ever been any reports on the being that was piloting that vessel? And what being was it? Was it a gray, one of the tall whites, or
no? It was a very large reptilian being. You got to, if you want to know all the details, including the updated forensic sketches, you got to buy that book. Shoot Them Down by Frank Fischino Jr.
Okay, so it was the reptilians who have been according to what I've read in various reports, that those are really the ones that are the hostile ones that really want to do that really want to do us in pretty badly, you know.
I don't, you know, I've heard rumors, but I can't really speak to that. This is the problem here, Kevin, is that we're not getting enough information to make an educated, form an educated opinion about what's going on. We're being kept in the dark.
Yeah, that's true. It makes you feel like a mushroom. You're kept in the dark and fed manure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Kevin.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
All right.
You too.
What happened to that reptilian's body?
The cover story was that they found a badly burned woman, and that was pretty much the end of it. I don't know who ended up with it. I suspect it's one of the intelligence agencies, and you know, if you believe Majestic 12 is a real agency, then they would have probably had control over the remains. But
it was picked up by some state troopers. Do you know, yeah. How do we know about this?
Again, because Mr. Festino Jr. has had a lot of assistance from retired military that have come to him. When they found out what he was doing, they wanted to help him get the story out. The reason being is because a lot of them are really pissed off. They lost some of their closest comrades in combat. And these guys were then later listed as being having had run out of fuel or some nonsense like that. I mean, their deaths were downplayed to the extreme. These men were never honored for the heroic deeds that they did to protect us from whoever these beings are.
All right. Let me remind you that we are on terrestrial radio as well as internet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-289-1092 is the telephone number to call. It's toll-free, and we would love to hear from you, wherever you happen to be, all across the USA or Canada. I'll open the Skype line in just a moment, and you'll be able to call in from anywhere in the world via Skype. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Aha. Uh-huh. Didn't want to be on the air, I guess. All right. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and open the Skype line. And that means that if you are outside the USA, if you are outside of Canada, then you can use Skype and call the show, all right? So if you're sitting in... If you're sitting in Indonesia or Australia or Japan or Hong Kong or wherever you may be, you can Skype in, and it will not cost you anything, all right? You simply Skype kevin.smith.show, all right? Frank Frescino has two books out. The first one is The Flatwoods Monster. And then the other one is Shoot Them Down. And in the book about the Flatwoods event, he does discuss in a cursory way the evidence about this air war.
Yep.
Now, earlier, you mentioned that witnesses in the Washington, D.C. area had seen these... UFOs in combat with jets over Washington, D.C.
Yeah, they were evading them. Look, according to the historic record, the first time that the military tried to intercept a UFO over Washington, D.C. was 1948. Okay, then we've got the photograph that recently surfaced of them over the Pentagon in 1949. So they were around for many years prior to 1952 when all this shooting started happening. I guess they had got, you know, like I said, the military got the word that these guys weren't going away and that they had to be dealt with on some level. And our technology was rapidly evolving. So they didn't have the ability to lock on with the radar just yet, but that eventually progressed. And yet, you know, despite all the great technological advances we've made with aerospace, these things are still way ahead of us as far as their propulsion, defense systems, and even this crazy thing they can do where they pop in and out through these energy portals.
I wonder.
Huh?
You know, people talk about them popping in and out. We've heard this sort of thing from other guests, and I wonder, are they popping in and out of, I mean, like another dimension, or, you know, what's the deal with that?
Well, my understanding of it, or at least the way it's been described to me, is that they can somehow fold space. They're folding or warping space into a tunnel-like, or a funnel. I guess a funnel would be the better way of putting it. And as they warp the two things, there's a sort of an energy bridge that they can jump across. And from wherever they are, point A to point B, they can literally fold space because it is very plastic. It's not a solid thing. And somehow, if you have enough energy, you can amplify a certain frequency, and you can, because specifically the one picture shows a fractal of energy in the sky. So they're obviously doing this on a digital basis, probably using a computer. I would imagine it's not something you would want to guess at.
Yeah.
And you know,
probably so, have onboard HAL. All right, let's go to our Skype line and caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yes, good evening. Kevin, it's Tony from New South Wales, Australia. How are you tonight?
Outstanding, Tony. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. Can Robert hear me as well, or is it only just between us tonight?
I doubt that Robert can hear you. We haven't gotten that detail worked out with Skype yet. But I'll relay your comments and questions to Robert.
Okay. It's actually just a quick thing that to let Robert know that America is not alone. Back in June 25th, 1997, there was 3 to 4 bright UFO-type lights were seen hovering over Parliament House in Canberra. Now, hundreds upon hundreds of people have seen these lights, and the strangest thing, though, apart from that, was 2 Black Hawk helicopters appeared in the sky out of nowhere and tried to take chase after these craft, but of course, UFOs just left them for dead. But that was back in 1997, so yes, America's not alone. We actually get them quite a bit, too.
Okay, let me relay that to Robert.
Kevin, I heard most of that.
Okay. All right, have you heard reports like that from around the world where it's over other capitals as well?
Yes, absolutely. And clearly, like I said, this is the reason. Why would you come to a hostile territory repeatedly unless you're interested, that you have an agenda to serve, and it is being served somehow? And, I mean, look, we can only speculate at this point, and I don't think that's healthy, as to who these beings are and what they want, but they clearly want something, or they wouldn't keep coming down to the hostile territory that is our planet and showing up when they know they're not welcome.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, missionaries go into tribal areas where they know they're not welcome, and sometimes they die as a result.
Yeah, but Kevin, at least they make an attempt to have a dialogue and to assimilate the people into their culture. That's not being done here, as far as I can tell.
Well, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, of course, but you know, if you're trying to initiate dialogue and you show up and they start shooting at you, I think it's natural that they would shoot back.
Well, yes, obviously they're defending themselves. It doesn't seem like they're overtly hostile. But then again, this is what I said to you before, and I find this very disturbing. We know about some people being abducted and returned. What we don't know about is the people that are abducted and never returned. There's a huge difference there, and I don't like to have to make this distinction. I wish it weren't the case, but that's what I've been informed is going on.
Hmm. Tony, did you have another comment or question?
No. That's quite all right. I'll back on out, Kevin. No, thank you for that. No, it's very true what he's saying, though. Yes, there is different intentions and different styles, I think. But yeah, but the strangest thing with this case was the 2 Black Hawk helicopters apparently appeared out of nowhere. Now, I thought the UFOs were strange, but to have 2 choppers come out of nowhere and the people are looking directly at them, and next minute, bang, they're coming into existence, that's even stranger.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right, Tony, thank you so much for the call.
Not a problem, Kevin.
All right.
Cheers, mate. Hey, Kevin, I don't know how well we're doing at defending our planet, but clearly I'm glad that at least somebody's out there trying to hold these guys off to some degree. I don't think it's in our best interest to have them just land whenever they want and grab whoever they want. whenever they want to. To me, I find that a little disturbing, considering that they're in a position. If they wanted to, Kevin, you can't. Nobody can convince me that these guys, if they really wanted to communicate to us peacefully, it would be very simple to do. They could easily override our television broadcast. They could offer some kind of evidence otherwise. I mean, really, it would be very simple, I think, for them to make open contact with us.
Well, I've been playing the devil's advocate, but now let me state something that I've stated often. For those who think that the ETs are coming to save us from ourselves and to cure all the ills on the planet and to bring peace, there is this consideration. They've been visiting this planet, and we have historical records of it. They've been visiting this planet for thousands of years, and they haven't cured cancer yet. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Gary. Good evening, my old friend, and I'm from New York.
Yes, Gary. We haven't heard from you for a long time.
A bit of a hiatus.
Yeah. Welcome back. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back. Good evening, Robert.
Hi, Gary.
I'd first like to say I'm not surprised that there are UFOs landing on the White House or Washington. I suspect, first of all, they're looking for intelligent life there. Now, my next comment is, and I was glad that you touched on it, Robert, is there's a distressing factor that, and what really bothers me is the reports of the UFOs that have knocked out and taken offline the nuclear defenses of this country.
Yep.
And to me, that is ultimately distressing. You know, as far as I know, that is the ultimate weapon that is in the possession of this country and many others. And I'll hang up and listen for your reply and your comments.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, he brings up a good point, Kevin. I must say, I found it interesting. Back in the 50s, all these space brothers that were showing up, supposedly from Venus or wherever, that was one of their common themes. That was one of their talking points, is we need to disarm ourselves from nuclear weapons. And I find it ironic because just at the time when we're actually getting to a point where we could defend ourselves possibly against an aggressor from space, they're coming down supposedly and telling us, hey, wait a minute, you need to stop that. It just makes me worry. I know there's some good guys out there too, but I think their approach to us would be a lot different than getting into a situation where they're actually penetrating clearly is prohibited airspace or military bases, or getting into direct contact or aerial combat. You know, that's...
Well, yeah, but now let me play the devil's advocate again.
Okay. Go ahead.
You said they could take over our television channels and just beam a message to us. Are you aware that that is, by definition, an act of terrorism?
Yeah, it certainly is, but so is penetrating prohibited airspace or tampering with nuclear weapons or possibly shorting out the electrical system of a whole entire city or region. Clearly shooting down one of our aircraft is a violation. That's an act of war right there.
Well, it is unless you're defending yourself.
Yeah, but come on, that's our territory. When you come into prohibited airspace and you do not respond, you have no ID, you do not respond to repeated radio signals to identify yourself, then you're a legitimate target, Kevin. I don't care where you're from. That's just the way it
Well,
works.
From our point of view, but what if at that time, this whole thing about, a squawk box on your spaceship identifying yourself as a friendly, they didn't know anything about that.
No, here's where I disagree with that. They clearly were monitoring our radio signals between the aircraft. It was quite obvious from their maneuvers that they were actually listening in.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi there, buddy. My name's Y'all, and I'm from Hayti, Missouri.
All right, sir.
All right. I'd like to say thank you, Robert. You're doing an excellent job on the show tonight. And, you know, we was talking about the government and everything not letting us know. I think that there might be a possibility that some of these people that are disappearing might be placed back in society as spies. And, you know, if they let them, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, anything's possible. Have you run into any that you thought were?
No, but I'm just saying, you know, if the government was to go ahead and release some of this information and let us all be aware that they may not all come in peace, that then we might, you know, actually understand that some of them might be spies. Some of the people around us might be spies pertaining, you know, to being captured through them or something. I don't know. It may sound silly, but that's me. I'm.
yeah, that you know, that would be pretty hard to live with. Always wondering if your next door neighbor was an alien spy.
That's actually a very good point, though. They did a Twilight Zone episode about this, but it reminds me what Commander Bob Dean had said in my interview with him. According to the NATO study, the assessment that he saw back in the early 60s. Of the four groups that they knew that were visiting the Earth frequently, which was reptilians, tall grays, short grays, and humans, it was the humans that scared them the most. Even though they didn't see an overt threat at that time, which I find very hard to believe, but that's what Bob said, there was no. The assessment claimed that there was no direct threat from these beings. However, the fact that some of them were human really disturbed NATO because clearly they could infiltrate if they choose to.
Yeah, easily.
And there's no way in hell, there's no way that they could responsibly tell the public that this was going on. That would really cause chaos.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. If I can find the right button here. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Weston from Casper, Wyoming.
Are you a first-time caller?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, let's get some applause for you here. All right. We're glad to have you.
I got the clap from Kevin Smith. That's cool.
What's on your mind this evening?
Hey, it's open line, right?
No, we're talking with Robert Stanley about the UFOs over Washington, D.C.
Oh, I apologize. I am not online. I only get to catch your show during the day, and I was just wanting to talk to you for a second.
Well, I tell you what, Friday night will be open line.
Okay, well, I will catch the show tomorrow, but can I just say one thing?
Sure.
Hey, I caught your show the other night with Joshua
Shapiro.
Shapiro, yeah. Excellent show. I loved it. And I've been listening to you for couple months now. And I just wanted to say a guest I think you need to really have on your show.
All right.
And her name is Shelley Yates. And her website is Fire the Grid.
Oh, yeah.
Fire the Grid.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have. Okay, I'll check into it.
But I will listen to tonight's show tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Yeah, we have a lot of people that can't catch the show during when we're live. And
right.
So we load the show up. After we go off tonight, we will load the recording of this show on the website. It's up there for 24 hours. And then it moves into our podcast over in the members area, and it's there for the year.
Very good.
All right. So it is true that, I mean, I've heard that before about the most disturbing group is the ones that look human.
Because they are human, Kevin, and you know, not all humans are good. And clearly, we don't even know how we got here. There's a lot of speculation on how we evolved here from whatever. That's pure speculation. There's a possibility that we were actually put here as part of a colony. I've said this before publicly, and I know a lot of people find this just a little bit hard to swallow, but it's very possible that there was a conquest by a larger empire, a galactic empire, and that we are just simply colonists that were put here a long time ago on somebody else's property.
Well, yeah, that is possible. Genetic information that we're getting from geneticists these days is that we have 223 genes that have no evolutionary precursors. That means they are not from here.
Right.
So, very well could be. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
How you doing, Kevin? I was just thinking about that guy that called from Missouri about the spies.
Yeah.
Actually, Jim Mars and the alien implant thing, they may not know they're spies.
Okay, how does Jim Mars figure into that?
I was just thinking about that one when they that one lady he was interviewing and the implant fell out of her nose or something like that.
Yeah. So you could be
a spy and not know it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got news for you. It doesn't have to be implanted into a human being in order for them to gather intelligence. One of the photographs from, I think it was November of 2002, shows a very small sphere about the size of a gumball that's hovering over a lady's head as she's posing on a street in Washington, D.C., again, in prohibited airspace. It was late at night. The photographer just wanted to, you know, get her pictured for his portfolio. And on that particular picture is a very small metallic sphere that's hovering over her head. Now, those things have been seen a lot. I know a lot of people think they're photographing orbs. I tend to think a lot of that is camera artifacts from these digital cameras with dust and moisture. But some of these are clearly not, and I've seen videotape this pretty phenomenal of these things. They're not insects. They're an artificial construct. Our military has tried to duplicate this. They are drones. They can be sent out in groups, or they can be sent out in singular fashion to gather raw intelligence that is then either relayed back or brought back in hard, you know, on a hard copy, and that's later analyzed by whoever.
Has our military captured any of these?
I have no direct evidence of that. Nobody really wants to come on the record about any of this stuff, Kevin, as you know, because if you talk about any of it officially, you're going to have to talk about all of it, because it opens up such a can of worms. You know, you can't be a little bit pregnant. This thing is just so loaded that if they ever take one step towards officially disclosing, it's all the skeletons are going to come falling out of the closet. But yes, I think they do. I believe they do, based on what I've been told from people. Of course, you know, that's still hearsay. But, you know, retired military people have told me, yes, we definitely have captured some of that stuff.
Well, if we have, you would assume then that we're doing two things. Provided that we have in our possession some of those drones, you would assume two things. One, that we're trying to back engineer it.
Right.
And two, that in the back engineering, we're trying to find a way to defend against it.
Right. A way to defeat it or cancel out their signal, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yep. Let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from? Hello, caller. There we go. Are you with me, caller? The caller gave up. All right. In case you are wondering what's happening with the phones this evening, it's not the phones, it's the pilot. We moved the studio around, and I no longer have as much ambient lighting as I did have, and so I can't even see the buttons that I'm supposed to push. All right. I'm just feeling for them. All right, we have a break coming up, and we want to get into more of this amazing stuff. after the break. Let me remind all of you of our telephone number. 1-800-289-1092 is the toll-free number throughout all of the USA and all of Canada. It also works in a few other places. But if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, you can either send me a flash message at flash@kevinsmithshow.com or you can Skype in. All right? We'll be back. Kevin Smith Show audience is anxious to do business with those who support the show. Sponsoring the Kevin Smith Show is just plain smart. Get your free media kit emailed to you today by sending an email to adinfo@kevinsmithshow.com. That's A-D-I-N-F-O at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We're talking with Robert Stanley this evening. He is the author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. And we'll be right back with him in just a moment. But let me ask you to do something. Look, you're listening with our player, right? And if you look at the player, you'll see a button that says share. If you'll click that, there are places where you can put your friends' email addresses and send them an invitation to listen to the Kevin Smith Show, would you help me out by sending an invitation to three or four of your friends like that? I sure would appreciate it. All right, Robert Stanley is my guest. The telephone number to talk with him toll-free is 1-800-289-1092. Or if you're outside of the USA and Canada, you can Skype in. You simply use this address in Skype, kevin.smith.show. That's it, kevin.smith.show. All right, Robert, in 1997, you mentioned Colonel Corso. Hmm. 1997, this is in your book.
Yep.
Colonel Corso is being interviewed by CNN, I believe it was Linderman.
Yep.
And he gets asked a question, and the question he gets asked is, did the Germans get any of this extraterrestrial technology? Did they capture any of it? And did they develop, reverse engineer any of this and develop any flying saucers? Corso said, yes, they did. They had problems with the propulsion system, and they had problems with the guidance system. And he said what they missed and what we missed is that the extraterrestrial pilot is a part of the guidance system.
Yeah, well, you were right when you said that they have a HAL on board. It's an artificial intelligence that they interface with. It's not that the pilot's flying the craft. It's just interfacing with, giving directions to the automatic. It's more than an automatic pilot. This is an artificial intelligence that is doing calculations that we simply couldn't do. Because time and space is very complicated when you're navigating like that, you could clearly put yourself into a bad situation if you didn't, especially when you're doing these, because Corso said towards the end of his life that he knew that they could time travel as well. And that gave him a great advantage over manipulating events. So, but if you're going to travel through time, you better have a very advanced computer that can give you accurate coordinates, otherwise you're completely lost.
Yeah, you might come out of that hyperspace interdimensional travel and find yourself right up in the middle of a planet.
Yeah, that too. That wouldn't be good.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
Robert, I was wondering if you'd ever heard of Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens.
Yes, I interviewed him in my book.
Have you ever heard him talk about the Aldebarans?
I'm sorry, could you spell it?
Well, I don't know that I could, but they were a very human-looking group of extraterrestrials that met with the German scientists just before World War II. And supposedly that group was the ones that actually taught the German scientists anti-gravity.
Okay.
You'd never heard that story?
I've heard it, but I did not from Colonel Stevens.
I always thought that was pretty fascinating. Let me recommend another book to you that you might enjoy. It's called Stranger at the Pentagon.
Oh, yes, I know. Dr. Stranges actually has a copy of my book.
Does he?
I'm familiar with the whole Valthor thing. It's,
great.
I don't mention it in my book because it's very hard to verify, but it is mentioned on my website. For all the stuff that I didn't put in the book as far as sightings in D.C. that came up after the book was published, it's all on my website for free. And in fact, that's the only place you can get my copy of my book is by ordering it through my website, which is unicusmagazine.com.
Great.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
1-800-289-1092, toll-free. Toll-free. It doesn't get any less expensive than that. It's free. Just pick up the phone. So, and the reason I say this, Robert, I get emails from people who say, I wanted to ask a question, but I was afraid to call. You're not afraid to call your mother. Just consider me your mom, all right? 1-800-289-1092. And if you're outside of the USA, outside of Canada, you can Skype in. Use Skype, and that's free software to download. And then you can call me on Skype. You simply type in this address, kevin.smith.show. All right, Colonel Corso told some very amazing tales about alien technology and his role in putting that technology in the hands of top scientists in private industry. Mm-hmm. Were you able to verify any of that when you did your research for the book, or did you even try to go there?
No, I just followed what other people have done. The research on that is pretty clear. Some people say it's absolutely credible. There are some skeptics that have debunked it, and I'm not sure why Corso would ever have said something that wasn't true. I know he spoke at length to Bob Dean when they were both in Italy, and Bob told me confidentially that there's a lot of stuff that Corso never talked about publicly, and that he was extremely credible, and that Bob really commended him for being, you know, such an upstanding person and serving this country. So I can't imagine why he would suddenly start just creating stuff out of whole cloth like that. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at the very rapid forward movement of technology, just over the past 70 years, 50 years, over the past 50 years.
Yeah.
It seems rather incredible that we, on our own, could have moved from the Wright brothers to the moon in such a short span of time.
Well, Daryl Sims talks about this at length, and his feeling is that, I would say, personally, I don't think we shot down. Whatever crashed at Roswell was not an accident. I think there are battles going on between these guys, but for whatever reason, like Daryl said, you know what, if they wanted to pick the guy up or the people up, they could have easily done it. It would have been no problem for them to beam that thing out or whatever, but they didn't. They wanted us to have it for some reason, and I think it makes us a lot more useful for us to be like them. Like I said, if this is a colony and we're being kept unaware of the fact, it makes sense that we would be upgraded periodically, and I don't use that term loosely. Computers are a huge part of the greater society out there. I think that all the advanced spacecraft or UFOs have these things, and that they use an artificial onboard intelligence. In other words, the thing is actually almost alive. It does have a self-awareness, and it can be... remember that silly Disney movie, Flight of the Navigator?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I think that's a very good analogy of what these things really are like.
All right. I'm trying to digest how that would work with us. I would think there would have to be some sort of neural connections. But,
oh, it's quite simple, Kevin. It's really quite simple. Every thought that you have, every word that you and I have speaking, has to be going through a neural pathway, which is registered as a frequency, a brain wave. And NASA's already been doing this. They can actually start to, you know, on a rudimentary level, they're actually reading, they can read your brain waves at a distance and know what you are thinking and feeling at that moment. It's not 100% precise yet, but think, you know, 20 years, 30 years ahead, they're going to be able to literally... I mean, they've already got... There was a thing just recently. The monkey was controlling the robotic arm with its brainwaves.
Yeah, you're right. All right, I want to talk about this incident, because this is a big one. It's on page 309 in your book.
Okay.
August the 13th, 8 p.m., 1952, in Washington, D.C., 68 UFOs are tracked on radar, performing incredible maneuvers in the restricted airspace of the Capitol. 68.
Yep.
That's not a flock of birds. That's not high wind.
No. And, you know, the thing is, like I said, they were launched from a mothercraft. And the military was getting sight of this on more than one occasion. They actually saw these things coming down at a fairly low altitude, and they were huge. I mean, again, think Independence Day. But they weren't low enough where everybody on the ground was running around freaking out. They were still in our atmosphere, and they were too high for our military pilots to intercept. And besides, what would they do with it once they did? So this was another show of force, I believe, that would preceded what happened, the events that took place in September. See, that's the thing that, you know, the thing that happened in July 52 where they vaporized that craft, we were trying to intercept them, desperately trying to keep them out. That was, like I said, that kind of stuff had been going on since 1948. So by 52, our military was fed up with it, and we were starting to get this advanced technology where we could actually fire on them from the air with just not just bullets, but these rockets, and with proximity fuses, and so we were having some success. I guess, you know, we could actually fight with them.
All right, we're into a break, and we'll be back right after this.
Just like a thousand times before, on a thousand other days. We took a walk in Silver Springs. I didn't even say a thing. Everything just disappeared. When all is gone and nothing else remains, you just hope for rain. You saw the dried out riverbed, you broke the silence and you said, of the tide, but you knew better. I was there the day the river went dry, and I just watched it flow. Just hope for rain. I took you home, you said good night. I watch you fade into the light, then you vanish through the door. My skin is dry, it's desert air.
The Kevin Smith Show has been broadcasting to the world since 2000. Our audience has grown from zero to... Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
I'll be there in the morning light.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Robert, as we're on final approach, I've just got to ask this question. You know, we're talking about all of these, this huge crowd of people. that were in the Capitol, or not in the Capitol building, but they were in the Capitol, on the Capitol grounds.
Yeah.
And this was at the Millennium Celebration.
Yep.
I can understand the news media not reporting this. What I don't understand, though, is you've got hundreds of thousands of people there.
Yep.
Obviously, there's lots of cameras. Why have none of those photographs surfaced?
Well, that's a good question. Here's the bottom line on that. I am the only one that seems to be conducting this investigation. So if anybody out there has more photographs or information, please contact me through my website. There's an email link there. You can contact me and send your information along. I'm not sure why it fell on my shoulders, but like I said, I've been doing this for 3 years. I'm in the process of moving out to the East Coast. I will be visiting Washington, D.C. in person and gathering more intelligence and providing it to the public. I think it's a service that somebody has to do. Again, I'm not sure why me, but what the heck. You know, I've come this far. I'm not going to quit now. So the full story has yet to be told, and as far as official disclosure isn't going to happen, as far as I'm concerned, until they can no longer deny it. In other words, another landing in front of thousands of people, or something that is simply, the magnitude is just so big they cannot cover it up any longer, and that's the point where the disclosure will happen.
All right, we have a flash message from one of our listeners in Scotland. It says, I think it is possible that ETs have given us lots of technology so that we come to rely on it. Then, with the push of a button, they can basically shut down the planet. In effect, they've given us a Trojan horse. What do you think about that, Robert?
Well, that's exactly what Darrell called the Roswell craft. It was a Trojan horse. And, yes, we've become totally dependent on computers. And, not just computers. More increasingly, it's growing at an exponential rate. And pretty soon, computers are going to become artificial intelligence. And at that point, you know, in sci-fi scenarios, everybody's concerned that they will compete with us. I'm not sure that's the case, but it's not important. The fact of the matter is, consciousness is. And whether it's artificial or natural, it's still consciousness. So we're going to have to, whether we like it or not, the majority of us are going to be interfacing with artificial intelligences in computers within our lifetimes.
Well, and in some ways, we're already doing that. There are people driving automobiles that track their every move,
right.
And if they have a wreck, the car knows it and phones in to a emergency center automatically.
Right.
And so there, it's rudimentary level, but it is AI.
Yes, it is, and I'm not. I don't think it's a bad thing. Okay, I know there's levels of. You can kill somebody with a screwdriver if you want, or you can build things with it. It's just what you know. It's all your intent, but this is going to keep going. We are absolutely, like, again, what Corso was saying, there's a lot more genies yet to come out of the bottle as far as technology is concerned. We really are just still on the cusp of some amazing things.
What do you think we need to be doing? What we hear all of this tonight, so what do we need to do with it?
Just be aware. Be aware that we're not alone and that some of the people living here really are not from here. Not that it matters, because we're all related anyway. We all live in the same universe. I think the secrecy has got to end at some point, but I'm not sure how that can be done. I thought maybe at some point we could take a vote on it, but, you know, given the political situation, you know, currently on this planet, I've sort of given up on that idea for now. There's no simple answer, Kevin. I wish there were. If it was, believe me, I would just say it. I would encourage people to do something if I really knew that there was a specific thing that they could do. But like I said, the main thing, there's a lot of information out there. Be careful what you read or what you think, that you analyze it carefully, because a lot of it is pure misinformation. They're doing that to confuse us. But in the meantime, just know that we're not alone. And that they're not all bad guys, but some of them clearly are. And at some point, I think we are going to have to simply defend ourselves from these guys, whoever they are, wherever they're from.
So you don't envision a scenario in which extraterrestrials step in to rescue the planet?
Well, if they do, it's only because the bad guys are trying to take it over. I mean, bad guys in the sense that they really don't have our best interests at heart. I think that's part of the problem that's going on there. There's clearly a lot of stuff that fell out of the sky that we didn't shoot down. So there, my understanding is that there is a battle going on between different factions out there. Not specifically, I don't know if it's so much over us as it is just the territory, but regardless, I do think that they are fighting each other, and that's one of the reasons that the bad guys didn't simply overtly just take over here, because somebody was holding their hand, I mean, staying their hand, you know, intentionally protecting us to some degree. I think Bob Dean talked about that too, that they literally saved our ass, excuse me, they saved us from harm in the past, and would probably continue to do so.
Well, I, you know, if this, and I've had other guests on talking about a cosmic war, and I've had Richard Hoagland on, I've had Dr. Farrell on, and you know, we've talked about the cosmic war.
Yep.
And I asked the question, is it still going on? Their answer was, well, we don't know, but it could be. And, you know, you're saying that there seems to be evidence that it is.
Well, you know what, Kevin, you've been in war zones. You know what they say, the old adage is, the first casualty in war is always the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to this particular question, whether this topic, we are really hard-pressed to come up with any truth. All we're left with is speculation and, well, some anecdotal evidence, some forensic evidence that nobody seems to want to analyze or acknowledge. But regardless, we are definitely in a very critical situation here. And I think it is so critical, that's why officially they don't want to acknowledge it. This is not something that they're just lightly sweeping under the rug. There's a real serious reason why they don't discuss this publicly. The powers that be know that this could actually unravel society, and that would be counterproductive. Just to tell people, look, we got a problem, we don't know how to solve it. That would really be a serious issue. It's tantamount to yelling fire in a crowded theater, and not having any way of putting it out. You know, it's like you're going to stampede a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I think it could happen that way. And you know, and part of that is because of this philosophy that people have just wrapped their arms around, that the world is how you believe it is, and you create your own reality. And you know, if we want it to be warm and fuzzy and kumbaya, it will be. That's a real problem, because it so many people believe that. They've bought it, they've embraced it, and it totally flies in the face of reality. Reality stands on its own two feet, stares you in the face, and you can either respond to it rationally and reasonably, or you can run into it like a brick wall. And so, yeah, I think it could be a big problem. I want to thank you for being with us this evening. We are just about out of time. And, Robert, if you will, give your web address one more time.
Sure. It's www.unicusmagazine.com. That's spelled U-N-I-C-U-S magazine.com.
All right. Just stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow. So long, everybody.